This is CKCU Literary News. Here's your host, Hans-Georg Ruprecht.
And with CKCU Literary News, senior correspondent Friederike Knabe.
Good morning, Friederike. Hello. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you, Hans. Well, it's good to see you again.
Well, it's great to be with you just a few days after the 450th birthday celebration of William Shakespeare.
Well, that is obviously a good date.
And yes, it is. Now, you know, thinking about this, I found scene 4, act 3 of Twelfth Night, where we have this kind of funny dialogue. It's Fabian talking to Sir Andrew. And, well, listen to this. Fabian, more matter for a May morning. Sir Andrew, presenting a paper. Here's a challenge. Read it. Warrant there is vinegar and pepper in it. Fabian, is it so saucy? Now, Friederike, I'm asking you. You were at the Ottawa International
what
Writers
a comparison.
Festival.
What a comparison.
Was it juicy? Was it saucy?
Yeah, there was.
In a different way. And I bet it was.
It was, yeah, it was all that and a lot more. It was illuminating, thought-provoking. We went back into Greek mythology and we went into San Francisco in the 1870s. So we got a lot of juicy stuff to go, yes.
And I guess it was also a return to 19th century England, given the fact that Emma Donoghue, the award-winning author of a trilogy devoted to the British class society, is coming up with a new novel. But it's not about that topic, no?
No, but it's about that time, because the novel is set in San Francisco in the 1870s. It's a historical novel about two women. One gets shot right away at the beginning of the novel, and then the rest is the crime story to work out how she was shot, why she was shot, by whom, and the one who survived, you know, has a lot of work on her hand. It's a very juicy story and very saucy story. I don't want to give much away of it, but listening to Emma Donoghue read from it and describe the context of it and what she had to do to research this book, it is an absolutely extraordinary book. I've just started reading it. But this was not the only juicy story that we had to deal with. We had a lot of other interesting books to read. We also went back, as I said.
I guess we would like to concentrate on three of your favorite authors, right? Personally met at the Writers' Festival. I think it was Jonas Bengtsson from Denmark. Then it was Onjaki from Angola.
Yes.
And
Sean Michaels, who is Scottish but now lives in Canada.
Right.
And as we already mentioned, Emma Donoghue, so that would be the one of them. Now, it is interesting that two of those authors, Jonas Bengtsson and Onjaki, really made their premier visit in North America at the International Writers' Festival, and they're going to other cities as well. But this first time they're in North America, and Jonas Bengtsson was explaining how long that flight was from Denmark. But his novel he's very well known in Denmark. He's won numerous awards in Scandinavia, and he likes to write about characters at the edge of society.
Yes. Now, look, his novel has this intriguing title, A Fairy Tale, right? Now available in English at House of Anansi, 2014. And I found, in fact, on the Ottawa International Writers' Festival webpage, a quote. He said that a fairy tale, and I quote, "I think it's about myself if I was much more radical than I am. It's about trying to be free and seeking freedom in the society we live in and what the costs might be." Did you guess or did you get while listening to him that he is questioning our way of life and the way we are losing or fighting for our individual freedom.
I think it's one on a very personal level, but what the element that he's not saying there, but which he has told us at the introduction to the book, but also which is very much on the book, it is a story about a father and a son, or a son and a father, and it's written in the voice of the son rather than the father. And the father is living at the fringes of society, but because he has a son and he suddenly has to take responsibility for the son, who is 6 years old when this novel starts, and it's similar in his own personal life that he took over the responsibility for his son, who was then five, that he's had to rethink his role of freedom and how radical he could be and what the conventions were that he had to adjust to, given that he now had a child that he was responsible for. And this sort of tension in the father between this need for independence and freedom, at the same time creating a safe and secure environment for his child, that the child can live as much with him in this freedom space, but at the same time, he couldn't go beyond certain parameters because a child has total trust in the parent. And that was something that he explores in the novel, but also something he had to learn in his own life.
Yes. The father figure of, in Freudian terms, the figure of the superego, the law, right? Creating security and responsibilities. It's an eternal challenge for sons, I think, even more demanding and more difficult than for girls. What do you say, sir?
I wouldn't want to generalize. I grew up without a father, so I don't know what that would have meant in my life. But yes. I think he explores this really well, the absolutely close relationship between father and son, and this constant questioning whether he's doing the right thing. But he cannot, in this case, he cannot really change his own life to the point that the child would have an organized, regular life. For example, he does homeschooling because they constantly move. They constantly go to other places. So he doesn't have a sort of a regular, normal, bourgeois, let's say, surrounding. So the father has to create this world that is secure and safe and whole. And the fairy tale is a fairy tale within the novel, as well as, you know, in a transposed sort of way.
Does this remind you in any way of Franz Kafka's Letter to the Father and questions about what role his relationship to the father or with the father played in his entire literary production of his
work? Oh, yeah, very much so. And he does, the author actually did mention his,
is that right?
His reading of Kafka and being influenced by Kafka.
Uh-huh.
But also in his own life, there are stories in there that reinforce that sort of questioning all the time about his role. He's written quite a few books before that have not yet been translated into English, but he said this was the most difficult novel to write for him.
Mm-hmm. Now let's move to the writer from Angola, Onjaki, yes, actually his full name is Dalu de Almeida, born in 1977. And in one of his writings, he is also referring to his childhood experience. This is a famous novel by Onjaki in the original, Bom Dia Comrades, Good Morning Comrades, published in English in 2001, I guess. Onjaki is also a filmmaker. He is by training a sociologist and author on the Angolan writer Luandino Vieira, a very famous
writer. Yes.
And of course, Onjaki is also a poet. Let's not forget this. And he started off as a poet with Actu Sanguineu. And then he is in the English-speaking world now I should really say, famous for his new novel, namely...
What Grandma 19 and the Soviet Secret.
What a title.
It's an amazing title. But just to add a couple of things, he did win the 2013 Jose Saramago Prize, which is a very, very prestigious prize.
Yes.
But also with his first novel, Good Morning, Comrades, he was named by various literary critics as one of the top African writers of his generation.
It was The Guardian, in fact.
And it was also mentioned in other places, not The Guardian alone. And both novels, the first one, Good Morning, Comrades, and Grandma 19, are coming-of-age stories of a young boy, but in slightly different times. And it's based on his own life. I mean, Good Morning, Comrades is very much an autobiographical novel. It is very interesting, too. It was written about the time when Angola had just become independent and the major powers were two competing parties and military forces, UNITA under Zavimbi. They were supported by the U.S., and MPLA, which is more supported by the Soviet Union, given this was the Cold War in high time. And the Cubans played a very, very important role to help the Angolans.
Including Che Guevara.
And there is still a lot of admiration for the Cubans and their role in this liberation struggle, which, of course, the MPLA in the end won that particular conflict. But it is quite fascinating. Again, this is his first North American visit. He had just been in Brazil, which, of course, is understandable, good contacts between Angola and Brazil. And so he's on a North American tour. His English is surprisingly good. And he has an inborn sense of humor, which is quite hilarious. One of the things which comes out in the new novel, but also he talked about it very openly and in a very nice way, that he was raised by women. So the women in his novels are very strong and in a way take a much more prominent role than the male members of the family. In particular, he adores his grandmother, and she's the character Grandma 19. Why 19?
Why, yes.
Why 19? This is absolutely hilarious. We didn't know. Certainly in Portuguese, as spoken in Angola, I don't know whether that's a general Portuguese thing, there's no distinction between toes and fingers. Mm-hmm. So everybody has 20 fingers and toes. But by some accident, which is described in the novel, she loses one of her fingers. So that's why she gets the nickname Grandma 19.
Oh, that's very funny indeed. Yes.
He said it was wonderful the way he spoke about his grandmother, that he said he has a deal with his grandmother, who's now quite a senior lady, that she will not die before telling him about it when it's happening, and then so that he can be home.
Is this the secret or not? What is the secret then?
No, the secret is from a Soviet
The title.
And it's a mausoleum that the Soviets are building. But I won't tell you what's going to happen.
No, of course not. No, no, certainly not. I don't know. So you say it's hilarious, it's funny, but it's also a historical picture of a period about which we know so little, after the independence, when a new society is giving birth to new rights, new ways of living, new international contacts. Did he talk about that?
Yeah, a little bit. It's very much a theme of the first novel that is available in English. And I should mention, really, the translator, Stephen Hennigan. Stephen Hennigan is a well-known Canadian editor and writer and translator, and he more or less discovered Ondiaki. He was living in Portugal for a while, and he came across his first book, and now he's become a good friend. And he also is part of an international publication series, that Biblio Oasis, which translates particularly Lusophone authors like Ondiaki, but also Mia Kuto, who is one of the top well-known now Mozambican writer, and of course the two of them know each other. And so there is a new movement of writers coming to to participate in the debates of African literature with the Francophones and the Anglophones.
Yes.
And so it's a very interesting. So yeah, I think it comes out in both books, but it is really a new way of writing. And like many African writers, they mix the reality with fairy tale, with magical realism. So you always have to keep an eye on that part of the story as well.
Well, talking about African writers, I cannot help but suggest to our listeners that the second program of CKCU Literary News, which is in French, has just launched a fascinating new series entitled Parole d'Afrique, Entretien, Pensée critique et Poésie. And we are doing this with our correspondent in Paris, Antoine Houlou Garcia, who is a writer, critic, poet, well acquainted with African literature because he has a long experience in Senegal. So we are reaching out to African writers. And my feeling is that African literature is, well, breaking through to draw attention from all over the world. Isn't this your feeling as
absolutely,
well?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's buzzing. That's the only word I can use for that. It's buzzing in terms of African literature, and not from the sort of more well-known places like Nigeria and Kenya. It's coming from everywhere now, and not only Anglophone, Francophone. Of course, we knew Senegalese authors for a long time, but there's a new generation, a new crop of writers. And there is a new debate going on between African writers about what is their role within their own society, the African diaspora, for example. You know, how can they bring all these different themes together? And yeah, as I said, it's absolutely fascinating, very, very interesting.
Yes, okay. Well, that's something to keep an eye on, and it should be continued as far as our broadcast goes. We will, of course, come back maybe with interviews with African writers. We had a few in mind. We will try that, right? You are going quite soon to the UK. You will be in London. Maybe there you will have occasion to meet.
We'll see how it all works out.
How it works out, Frederike.
Let me just, what was fascinating, this is the 17th International Writers Festival.
Yes.
And it really has evolved tremendously. And
yes, why?
And because it takes word and writing through all the different genres. So it's fiction, nonfiction, is short fiction, is novels, of course. It's blogs. We had a session on blogs, which were absolutely fascinating. Poetry, of course, a lot of poetry. And again, there is a new generation of Canadian writers, often from other backgrounds that bring in a new flavor. I was particularly interested in two books. One of them is written by a Canadian author, Jonathan Bennett, who spent much of his life in Australia, and he's basically a poet. And the novel he's just written, called The Colonial Hotel, is set in an unnamed country in an unnamed region of the world, but it's a Civil War country, so you can get that sense. But he takes the Greek mythological characters of Helena and Paris,
okay,
and reworks this into a modern scenario.
So it's like a parable of the colonial period,
Colonial period, war situation, love and abandonment and various other aspects come to bear. But the fascinating thing was what he said, he wrote this as a poem. Mm-hmm. But the poem became 80 pages long. So thus friends of his, independent of each other, have said, you should make this into a novel. And he did. And you can sense the voice of the poet in the writing. It's very haunting and very devastating, but beautifully written. This is one direction, but the historical novels, there are several historical novels that would be of interest. The other one I found fascinating was more the speculative fiction aside. Three novelists who all take language and encyclopedia and lexicon as a theme of novel. Now, you would never think that being an exciting topic. And three at the same time coming out. Now, one was an American author, Anne Guyden, and the other two were Canadians. And it was extraordinary how you can really create a new debate around what is happening with our language in the digital world.
Yes.
How does it change? What happens if suddenly something disappears? So you have a very detailed lexicon and an encyclopedia, and suddenly not only does one of the authors who works on it disappear, but his entry in the dictionary disappears. And there's a search on, you know, how does it go? The other one is also a tower of the big world dictionary. But the young man who's hired to help in the spooky, rather spooky tower, he doesn't read. So, you know, there you can already see the challenge of what's going to happen between in this new world, the ancient world, because the archives in the basement are still there, and the conflict between the different positions. So there's a whole new thematic area opening up.
As if these authors were questioning, you know, the status and the place of creative writing in our digital world.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, that, is there space for extensive writing? And looking at the range of novels and fiction in general we have seen, it clearly is, but there are challenges.
Yes.
There are challenges.
Would you please tell us a little bit more about the debate on literary blogs?
Yeah, the blog scene is very live and well in Canada. I was not that aware of it. But that interesting thing is that most of the blogs, certainly the ones that we listen to, were very personal blogs, but with quite an audience. So people digest, really, for some of them, they said that it was a preparation to writing a short story or a novel. So blog was opening up their way of expressing themselves and then testing it. And so in preparing, three of the bloggers, about 11 bloggers, three of them had already books published that evolved from their blog. And somebody else was explaining that she got into blogging because she didn't have the confidence to sit down and write a short story or a novel from scratch without any testing. And so she was told, well, why don't you write a blog and see how it goes? So it seems that blogs have less of a intellectual barrier to open up your mind or exploring deep thoughts or crises. Several of them were crises blogs.
Do you have the links to these blogs?
Yes.
Okay. I can, we could put them on our webpage.
Oh, yeah, we could. Yes.
Very
yeah.
good. But till next time.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye, Hans.
Bye-bye.
That was CKCU Literary News, a regular program about literatures in Europe today, brought to you by CKCU FM 93.1, the community-based campus radio of Carleton University in Ottawa, Canada. We can be heard worldwide. Simply go to http://carleton.ca/litnews/ for streaming and podcast. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter under CKCU Lit News in one word. Thanks for listening.